We're going to go ahead and start the webinar now. So hi, everyone, and thank you so much for concluding this amazing Climate Strike Week with us today at today's webinar. This is the Youth for Action Climate Webinar. And here at the YAPPod, our mission statement is to promote youth involvement around the topic of climate change. We believe as youth, we have noticed that very often youth are very passionate about climate change, but they don't know exactly how to help, so they do nothing. Our pod here is to change that by providing education, community outreach, and more variety of the youth. Now I'll pass it on to the co-leader, Natalia, to tell us more about the pod.
Hi, everyone. So I'm going to talk about a little bit more about our pod. Our pod is entirely composed of San Diego youth, currently all high schoolers who are passionate about the climate crisis. Again, we want to make combating climate change actionable for youth and conveying the importance of taking care of this earth in both big and small ways. We plan to do this by engaging youth and the community with fun activities, events, ways to take action, and so much more. So again, hey everyone, my name is Natalia Armenta. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. I am a current junior at High Tech High Media Arts. In July, I completed the Climate Reality Leadership Training. I'm a passionate advocate for climate and social justice, renewable energy, sustainability, and much more. I am a current member of the YAPPod, K-12 Education Pod, a communications director with the Green Schools Campaign, and a leader in my high school's environmental club. As our devastating futures approach, I hope to inspire other youth to take action against the climate crisis and shape their own future. Through education and spreading awareness, I believe we could create change in our communities. Outside of climate advocacy, I enjoy reading, writing, and robotics. Thank you everyone who was able to attend this webinar today. Now I'm going to pass it along to a fellow YAP member, Colin.
Hello everyone, my name is Colin Lowry and my pronouns are he, him, and his, and I am a senior at Eastlake High School. I completed the Climate Reality Global Training back in July, along with some of the other members in this pod. Besides educating the youth about our climate crisis, I'm passionate about the public health and environmental injustice aspects within climate advocacy. Along with being a part of the YAPPod, I'm also a member of the K-12 education team. But outside of climate activism, I enjoy taking care of my many houseplants and volunteering at my local hospital. Thank you guys for taking the time out of your day to join our webinar, and I can't wait for it to begin. But now I'm going to hand it over to Kiala.
Hi guys, I'm Kiala Minicho. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm a freshman at Canyon Crest Academy. I'm really passionate about coming up with actionable ways for everyone to get involved and combine their interests to tackle our current climate crisis. My goal is making climate change relevant to everyone, especially youth. I'm interested in a variety of topics, including biodiversity, sustainable design, marine science, environmental justice, policy, and of course, education and raising awareness. I am currently involved with the Climate Reality Project San Diego chapter, where I'm part of this pod and the K-12 pod, the Surfrider Foundation, Girls Play Global, the San Diego Green New Deal Alliance, and SD350's Youth for Climate Group. I'm so excited to help with one of society's most pressing issues, climate change, and I'm sure you are too. And next I'm going to pass it on to Isabel.
Thank you so much, Kiala. Hi everyone, my name is Isabel Lumahan and my pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm a senior at Eastlake High School. I'm a recently trained climate reality leader from this July and continued my fight for climate justice through the San Diego chapter. I joined the YAPPod and the K-12 education pod. I believe that the world is filled with pollution and it seemed like we can't escape it, but with our voices, I feel like we can combat these killers and restore a clean earth. Promoting youth voices in education is one of my key desires in the intersectionality of environmentalism, and ethical eating and public health are additional passions of mine. However, outside of this view of activism, I love making jewelry and crocheting as well. I appreciate everyone who joined us and hope you can all make an impact with us. Now I'll pass it on to my fellow member, Jesselyn.
Hi everyone, my name is Jesselyn Fong and I go by the pronouns she, her, and hers, and I'm also a senior at Eastlake High School. One of the reasons I'm taking action against climate change is because when you fight against the climate crisis, you fight for public health and social justice. And I want to educate and empower youth to use their platform in this amazing movement. So I became involved in this community after completing the Global Leadership Training in July, along with the other pod members. And since then, I've become passionate about climate education, justice, legislation, and sustainable consumption. Along with the YAPPod, I'm also a part of the San Diego chapter's K-12 education pod. and I'm also the Education and Outreach Youth Representative at San Diego 350, which is another local nonprofit. And outside of climate activism, I love listening to music, I love 80s music, and going outdoors. So thank you all so much for being here. I'm extremely excited to hear from all our amazing guest speakers. And I will now pass it on to Natalia, who will introduce our first guest speaker.
Girls are really cute. They're all kind of minority girls.
Okay, yeah. So hi everyone. Our first guest speaker for this evening will be Simon Aaron. At a young age, he co-founded a campaign and achieved many accomplishments. Hi, Simon. Thank you for joining us today and being willing to share your inspiring journey.
Hi.
Excuse me. Let's ask everyone to mute just so we don't have more interruptions. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No worries. All right. Hello. My name is Simon Aaron. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm an activist, high schooler, and the co-founder of the Green Schools Campaign. And I am currently living in Los Angeles on occupied Tongva land. That's me.
So, Simon, when did you decide to take action against the climate crisis?
Yeah, so probably around 2 years ago. So every year, like, my whole family used to go up to this farm. Like deep in the woods of Northern California. And about 2 years ago, there was a fire there. And the smoke around us was, like the woods around us were on fire and the river we swam in was like gray with ash. And it was really scary. And at that moment, I knew like something was wrong. So ever since I've sort of been trying to focus on like climate justice and climate activism, yeah.
So, would you like to talk about what the Green Schools Campaign is and your involvement with it?
Yeah, sure. So, the Green Schools Campaign is an initiative from Climate Reality Project's LA chapter to transition schools across the world to renewable energy by providing young people with tools, expertise, encouragement to like make it happen. And we're currently operating in like, I think, 14 countries. With a total of around 30 schools, and that number keeps growing. And we're just really excited about like trying to empower give kids the expertise they need to make changes in their communities. That's what we do.
So why did you decide to start this Green Schools Campaign?
Yeah. So it sort of started about 2 years ago, the LA chapter started trying to transition LAUSD, which is like one of the biggest public school districts in the country, to renewable energy. And that happened and it was a great success. And we figured like we have this expertise now and that it would be an amazing, like it would be like really powerful to sort of franchise this this process and make it accessible to like make it easy and accessible to people around the world. And we thought like it's a really good way of getting young people involved with taking action, and especially like where they have the most power, which is in their own communities, right? Like we can't really vote. We can strike and protest, which we should do, but we can't really vote. And schools are like where we can make a change.
So the Green Schools Campaign, it really focuses on how we should really talk about the importance of renewable energy. So in your perspective, what is the importance of renewable energy sources?
Yeah, as I'm sure you all know, our world is burning and we cannot continue on the path we're on. You know, fossil fuel corporations are taking the lifeblood out of communities, and especially communities of color and in the global south. And, you know, as I'm sure you all know, polluting our sky and turning it gray and orange and black. But I think that with, you know, the renewable energy revolution and like the sustainability revolution that's happening. We're gonna crush those corporations. And I think renewable energy is a way for young people to take our power back. So yeah, I think that's the importance of renewable energy.
Thank you. And also, how does the Green School campaign fight against the climate crisis on a local and global scale?
Sure. Well, I think on a local scale, it's really about getting people involved and allowing people to feel, to make a change, and a huge change. Schools are usually like one of the biggest emitters biggest like greenhouse gas emitters in the community, just because like of all of the like electricity use and heating and cooling and all that sort of stuff. So like that's really powerful. And then it's sort of like having the community participate in a project like this and undertake it, I think can really transform a community and a group in positive ways. And so that's sort of at a local scale. And at a global scale, we are trying to make it a norm that schools, you know, the places, like we're trying to teach young kids how to have, like we're trying to teach young kids so that they can have jobs, but there aren't jobs on a dead planet. Like it's really counterintuitive. And I think it should be the norm that schools and every place is runs on renewable energy. So that's sort of the global scale of it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to read the chat, but you can.
Okay. So to conclude, how can youth get involved, like beyond the Green School campaign?
Sure. And I'll answer the question after that. So yeah, how to get involved. Like we would so love everyone on the call to be involved. Like we've tried to make it super fun and easy and streamlined. So I'll put some links in the chat, but the three main ways are, like if you're ready to transition your own school to renewable energy, you can sign up at greenschoolsnow.org/firststep. You can also help out on our team. We need graphic designers and region coordinators all over the world, and we like put your skills to work. You can obviously like follow us. Instagram is a great way to connect. That's sort of like our most active platform right now. And you can also look out for sort of an interest meeting that we might do next week. That's sort of how to get involved. And you can always, here, I'll put my email in the chat too. You can always email me with like any questions or whatever, but those are the main things. And I do want to answer that question because it's a good question in the chat, if you don't mind. Do you mind if I answer the question in the chat?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the question was, how can schools achieve 100% renewable energy since they're grid connected? And the answer is that oftentimes, and I think this is what you're referring to, like oftentimes, especially public schools are gonna be connected, like certainly with other schools in their district, but also what you can do is, if you install solar, for example, you can put the solar back into the grid and then have them give you basically the same amount of solar. So it's like not direct, but, and then yeah, offsetting, it's just expensive, but if schools are up for that, that counts. But yeah, at like on-site solar or wind, depending on where it is sort of like what we're going for, and that's how we do it. Does that answer your question, Ryan? Hey.
Yes, so okay. We'll take a few minutes right now. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to type it in the chat or unmute, and if you have any questions for Simon.
I think maybe Gabriella, and then I'll answer Marie and Catherine. So. Gabriella, I'd love to hear a question. Oh, here, there is. Does this generally target individual schools or entire school boards and districts? Yeah, so this, it's sort of like it's up to the students. Oftentimes public schools, you need to do the district because there's just no way to do it otherwise. But private schools, usually it's individual. It's sort of a case by case basis. That's a great question. So are you going for micrograms? Don't know what that means. Sorry. Would you like, Microgrids. So a lot of solutions are really dependent on the school, and which is why like we have experts that are like gonna like work with the student and like try and figure it out. But microgrids are definitely something that we can go for. And there's other like that's just one thing. There's other things too, and it's just really like what works the best. Can you talk about greenwashing and how we can hold high schools, schools, universities accountable for it? Yes, greenwashing is terrible. I think that's definitely a concern, and like it's really, really sad and frustrating that definitely schools and universities and companies are greenwashing. Probably the best like way to hold them accountable is making sure like they actually have like a certificate and you ask them. And like, I think a lot of times it's just about that. And definitely like with our campaign, we're gonna like make sure they're actually doing the work. Okay,
so thank you, Simon, for everything and being here today. So thank you for joining us and speaking about the importance of renewable energy sources, the Green School Campaign, and actionable steps that youth can take. Now I'm going to pass it along to Kiala, who will introduce our next guest speaker.
Okay, our second guest speaker is Connor, and he's going to be speaking from the San Diego New Green Deal Alliance and the Sunrise Movement. So the first question, I guess we'll start off, is how did you get involved working with climate change? And specifically, how did you find out about the San Diego Green New Deal and Sunrise Movement?
Hi there, Kiala. Thanks for having me. I got involved in working in climate change about 4 years ago. Climate change has always been a part of my life. I'm the son of a ecologist. So it's something that's sort of always been prevalent in my life. But I think I sort of had a narrative going on in my head that a lot of us have had in this country's history that the experts are going to take care of it and the politicians are going to listen to the scientists and we are going to develop a solution that meets the crisis at scale. But once a climate denier got elected to the White House, my hope in that occurring dwindled pretty rapidly. So I just got more and more involved over the years. I found Sunrise about a year ago, heard about it on a podcast, and have been involved ever since. And I found about the San Diego Green New Deal Alliance. Working with Sunrise, I represent our hub in the Alliance.
Wow, that's really awesome. So inspiring. And I think a lot of people hopefully in the audience can relate to that. So I guess we can start by talking a little bit about, since you are kind of the representative and you're with the San Diego Green New Deal, what in your words is the Green New Deal and what could this mean for us on a local scale in San Diego and at a national scale?
Sure. So the Green New Deal is a governing framework that addresses the intertwining crises of climate change, worsening economic equality in this country, racial injustice, our weakening democracy, and provides intersectional solutions that meet these crises at scale. At the federal level, these are solutions like Medicare for All, a federal jobs guarantee, housing for all, investments in frontline communities, investments in infrastructure that would transition our economy justly to a zero carbon economy. So that's what it looks like at the federal level. In San Diego, it means things like transitioning our energy grid to 100% clean energy so that schools can transition much, much easier to clean energy. It means investing in frontline communities in South Bay San Diego, making sure that they have access to quality transit, access to shade, access to cooling centers as it starts to heat up. and making sure we're preparing for oncoming sea level rise, just to name a couple things.
Wow, the Green New Deal, every single time I hear about it, it's so inspiring to me. It gives me such hope for the future. I guess since this is a youth action-based webinar, what do you think the best way for youth is to help push the Green New Deal?
Sure. So right now, we are about 40 some odd days from the election. So like, if you can vote, you got to vote. We got to get the climate denier out of the White House. There's a lot of young people on this call, though, so I understand that. Voting's not necessarily an option for all of us. That doesn't mean you can't have an impact, though. You can phone bank. Sunrise right now, we have a postcard writing campaign where you can order a little thing of postcards and you can write little handwritten notes to young voters in key swing states to try and increase voter turnout there. You can phone bank for some Green New Deal champions, both local and federally. Here in San Diego, we have candidates like Mike Levin, Sarah Davis, Liz Levertu. There's some huge races like Nora Vargas for county supervisor, Tara Lawson-Reamer, also for county supervisor, Todd Gloria. Really just whatever you can do to help get out the vote this November, making sure as many people are voting as possible so we can get the climate denier out of the White House, get a Senate who will actually take action on climate, and make sure that we have a foothold to start actually fighting for the Green New Deal.
Yeah. So again, if you can't vote, there's so many different ways to help. I know, as Connor said, Sunrise Movement has theirs. I know Sierra Club has theirs. I'm making texts to voters in swing states, people twice my age. And I think there's so many different ways that youth can help. And the power of a youth voice can really impact older generations and how their mindset is. So I guess we'll transition a little bit to the Sunrise Movement. Do you mind like telling us, giving us a little bit of background on the Sunrise Movement and kind of your part within it?
Sure. So Sunrise Movement is a national movement of young people fighting for good jobs and a livable future. That's on the back of my shirt. I'm not going to turn around. It's basically, we are fighting for a federal Green New Deal. We do this three ways. Way one, we engage in mass, nonviolent, civil disobedience to make climate center in any sort of national debate, making sure that we are talking about these issues smartly. An example of that is when these wildfires were happening here in California. The reporting was just not quality on them. They were not talking about how these fires are getting worse because of the climate crisis. So one thing our movement did was we really pushed reporters to make sure that they were including the science on this. The second thing we do is we elect Green New Deal champions. This is up and down the ballot. Nationally, we endorsed about 20 candidates this year, which you can phone back on. And I just want to reiterate, phone banking really matters right now. It is the best way to get out the vote. And we have won really tough elections this year doing this. Ed Markey in Massachusetts, Jamal Bowman in New York, Cori Bush. All of these candidates won their races in part because of middle schoolers and high schoolers who were phone banking like crazy trying to get them elected. So yeah, just really key that we push for champions who are actually gonna fight for us in the Green New Deal.
Oh my gosh, it gives me just chills thinking about that.
Me too.
It's so exciting. Okay, so I guess this is the last question. We have to wrap it up. So I guess just this is kind of somewhat a blanket, and I'm sure you can put some more information about if youth want to join the Sunrise Movement. But in conclusion, what in your opinion is the best way for youth to get involved with the climate crisis, the best way for them to act? I know you talked about voting, but maybe going into more also long-term solutions, and if they're interested in different areas of environmentalism, what's the best way?
Yeah, totally. Voting is definitely just the first step in making sure we win this election. Right now, none of the candidates at the presidential level endorse the Green New Deal. So we are gonna need to push hard once we win in November to make sure that we are actually addressing the climate crisis at scale. So that means yes, organizing for November, but it also means getting active for more sustained engagement afterwards. So I would say the best way to do that is just get organized and get active in whatever group speaks to you the most. I'm obviously biased towards Sunrise and we'd love to have new people join us anytime, but there's so many great orgs represented on this call today and in San Diego. So like just any of them, whichever feels like the best fit for you. And make sure you are, just doing what you can to make climate a national issue that it, you know, it really should be, but it often is not held to be.
Yeah, so now is our Q&A portion. So if people want to put their questions in the chat, I just want to address a little bit because we didn't get to talk about the San Diego Green New Deal Alliance. The San Diego Green New Deal Alliance is basically, I think, over 40 now climate change organizations across San Diego uniting for the common goal of pushing the Green New Deal. So that's a great way if you want to check out their website. They have like literally a list of all the different climate organizations. So you can pick and choose whichever one you want. That's pretty cool. So I guess we'll just wait for questions to come in. So I think one from Gabriella came in. In your experience, how much power / autonomy is allowed to individuals in Sunrise? I want to start promoting a phone bank / canvas for local candidates. And if I join the Sunrise Hub, would I be allowed to start a subcommittee for hosting those sorts of projects? I guess this is a very specific question that maybe personally can be addressed, but I guess we could talk about how much individuals in Sunrise, like power they can get.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. What I love so much about Sunrise is I think we really try to empower members. Like one of our main sayings is that everybody's a leader. So we want to make sure everybody's doing everything they can to help this cause. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. So we're not necessarily going to like make people wait until we give them permission. We're going to make sure people have the tools to do what they want to do. So if you want to host a phone bank, we're going to make sure we train you to do that and give you the tools to succeed so that we can host as many phone banks as possible or build as many banners as possible or post as many things on social media as possible. We just want folks to get involved. We have this rule in Sunrise, it's called Rule of Threes. Basically, if you can get three people involved with you on a project, including yourself, so just a total of three people on any project, it's fair game. We support it. So it's a pretty freeing environment where you can sort of pursue what suits your fancy.
That's awesome. I love how the way the youth can just take direct action and they don't have to sit around and wait. I think our next question is, what do you think about the issue of the lack of plastic recycling in the US and the petroleum / oil companies pushing for Ameriplastics and shipping them to Kenya and Africa?
You know, I'm going to be upfront. I'm not super knowledgeable on this topic. I will say that my guess is we are not up to snuff when it comes to our recycling in the US, and we need to make really heavy investments in that if we are going to survive and thrive in the future. And this is definitely something that would probably be involved in the Green New Deal, because that sounds like a great jobs opportunity for people. That sounds like a great way to empower communities to make sure that we are properly recycling and engaging in as much of a circular economy as we can. And I see that Ryan is more of an expert in it, so we'll get back to that later.
How do we join the hub,
Simon? Yes, I'm going to share some links. Basically, follow us on social media, check out our website. I would say Facebook's the best way to know about our events. I will plug our upcoming general meeting. That's a great place to jump in. That's going to be on October 3rd at about 2 p.m., I want to say. You should find that on our Facebook page. Follow us on social media, literally just like DM us if you're like having trouble making a meeting. We have meetings multiple times a week. Pop into any of them and we'll make sure that we get you a buddy to get you into the hub as smoothly as possible. And there's hubs all over the US too. So if you don't live in San Diego, there's probably a hub near you. There's a resource on the national website where you can find local hubs. And if there isn't a hub, if you have two friends who are interested in doing it with you, you can start a hub.
Okay, that's so awesome and so inspiring. Yeah. Thank you so much, Connor, for having this conversation with me. I'm going to pass it off to our next speaker, our next interviewee, Madigan, and Colin will be interviewing her.
Hello, everyone. So as you heard, Madigan's going to be speaking, and she's a fellow youth advocate with an amazing story to tell. So thank you so much for joining us, Madigan. Can you please start off by telling us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Madigan Traversi. I'm a youth advocate from Sonoma County, California. I am 15 years old. I'm a sophomore at Sonoma Academy, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a trained leader with Climate Reality, and I'm an active leader and worker for our local National Children's Campaign Initiative, Schools for Climate Action. When I'm not working on advocacy, I'm passionate about performing arts and music. You may have seen me in Rolling Stone magazine over the summer sharing my climate story.
Wow, it seems like you're very passionate about climate advocacy, and you are doing amazing things already. So how did you become involved within climate advocacy?
So by mentioning that I was from Sonoma County, you can probably guess where this is going. But in 2017, on October 9th, my mom and I were woken up by a robocall on our landline with an evacuation warning. We had smelled smoke like earlier in the night. The automated phone message told us that there were three houses on fire about 8 or 9 miles away from our house. So we grabbed our dog and I got my school backpack and we got in the car in our PJs. Only three houses were on fire when we evacuated, so we didn't really think we were in danger or that our home was in danger, and we didn't spend any time grabbing any belongings. Once we got to the bottom of the hill we lived on, we saw flames on the other side of the valley. That mixed with how many cars were on the roads in the middle of the night was like our first moment of regret for not bringing more with us or grabbing any of my childhood artwork, our journals, and like any other memorabilia. The next day, my family found out that the house and property burned down. This included, you know, the trees that I grew up climbing in, the orchard and garden that my mom spent 15 years developing, and the home I'd lived in since I was born, completely burned to the ground. And at that point, thousands of people in my town were experiencing the exact same thing. The whole city was engulfed in the Tubbs fire by the next morning. But for some climate-related information on the Tubbs fire, when we got our evacuation call, three homes were on fire 8 miles away. The fire reached and burned down my house 20 minutes later. 115 mile per hour winds pushed the fire for the whole night long. So yeah, this is climate change. My family and I moved into a new house about 6 months later, but the risks obviously still stand. We've had destructive fires and dangerous smoke levels annually for the past 4 years. All of the local schools get canceled. There's countywide power outages, and I've had to actually evacuate twice since losing my house. Me and all of our community, we keep bags packed through every autumn in case of another evacuation. And this risk won't go away until the climate crisis is resolved. So when I learned about climate change, just after losing my home, I became aware that it wasn't, you know, just a coincidence and an unfortunate event. It was the climate crisis. And I immediately realized that there was no way I could sit back and do nothing about it while people suffer in these types of situations or much worse situations constantly. I found several ways to get involved, and now I'm extremely passionate. Being somebody who experienced it firsthand, as have so many people, I will not stop fighting for change, because I would like to do anything I can to prevent these tragedies from happening in the future.
Well, thank you so much for sharing such a personal story. I'm sure amongst all of us, we're very impacted by the story that you told, especially living in California. I don't know where like you guys are from, but we're more south in Southern California, and we have seen some effects of wildfires, but recently it luckily hasn't come as close to where we live. So just hearing this like heartbreaking story, again, I have no words but to applaud you. But seeing that you are a youth advocate and you've taken a lot of action steps already, what are some advice that you would give to some youth who want to take action towards climate change but don't know where to start?
I would say the best thing you can possibly do and the most important thing is just at first putting yourself out there, expressing your interest in advocacy to somebody you know is already involved. It could be a friend, a teacher, an adult who you know is involved. It goes a really long way. Being an advocate, I love hearing interest from people, and I love hearing new and creative climate solutions. So there's no shortage of opportunity in the advocacy world at all. So just reaching out to somebody who you know is involved, you'll definitely see opportunities start to pop up.
Perfect, thank you. So now we're open up to any questions. So if anybody has any questions, please feel free to ask in the chat.
Okay, somebody asked, do you have a link to the Rolling Stone article? I do. I will put that in the chat after I'm finished. I will have to pull it up, but I will put that in there. Oh, look, there it is. Yeah. Yes. Oh, can you talk more specifically about the work you've done or are doing? So yes, I have more recently become really interested in like environmental policies and campaigning. I am currently a full-time volunteer for Schools for Climate Action, where I do outreach, paneling, marketing, and congressional meetings. Schools for Climate Action is a nonpartisan grassroots organization that works with schools all around the country to help them form and pass resolutions. These resolutions declare climate change a generational justice issue, and we call on Congress to act on it. Each year we bring the resolutions to Congress and we meet with individual Congress members and their staffers, asking them to enforce new policies. Okay. Some of the firefighters who have been involved the last decade or so, and the indigenous people who are still here in California, have called for more controlled burning of tens of thousands of additional acres in order to minimize the size of wildfires we're experiencing because of climate change. Do you support that? What do you think about the balance of protecting California wildlife and burning additional forests to limit the size of the fires? I'm going to be perfectly honest, I have not looked into this a lot. I definitely see this is happening for sure. It's constantly happening, but I am very aware that these wildfires, you all are also probably aware that while they do initiate a lot in Sonoma County, they can spread very, very far. So, I mean, I think it can be a bit controversial just because, you know, there are a lot of people in California and these fires spread very far. We saw this and we are currently seeing it with the fires going on right now, some of which started in my town. Personally, I mean, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I'm sorry. I am not super educated on this specific issue. Would you be interested in speaking to some tiny Girl Scouts? I would be so interested if you send me the information. I would love that. I will also put the link to Schools for Climate Action in the chat after this. And it's not just for Schools for Climate Action members to help schools pass resolutions. If anybody else is interested in their school passing a resolution or schools around them passing a resolution, all of the information for that is on our website.
Perfect. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to speak at our webinar and share such a personal story. Now I'll pass it on to Kiala again, who is going to be talking to Ryan, who's a member of the Surf Riders organization.
I just want to say, Madigan, I'm so moved by your story. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of the natural disasters that are occurring today are climate change. And I think that spreading that awareness and realizing, making other people realize that too is very important. So I think our next speaker is Ryan, and he's with the Surf Rider Foundation. He's also a climate trained leader. And I guess we can just start of why are you involved with the climate crisis, or why did you join Surf Rider?
It's the same answer to both those questions. I've been a surfer my whole life, and I'd say probably 2013, 2014, it started to occur to me that the ocean was warmer than it was when I was younger. And knowing about climate change, the dots connected in my brain. And then I started to read more and realize how important it was. It wasn't just this amorphous future risk. It was happening now, and it was a real present risk that we needed to take action on. And then I had two daughters, and the future became even more important to me than it was before. So ever since then, I was looking for the group I could get involved with, and Surf Rider is super fun. It's a fun place to be. So that's where I've really put my energies.
Yeah, it's a really great community of people who are really respect our oceans and beaches. So I guess we can start with climate change and ocean preservation. So how does exactly climate change impact our oceans and beaches?
In tons of ways. I thought about how to answer this question because you told me what it was going to be ahead of time. I mean, clearly everyone knows about sea level rise. If you know anything about climate change, you know sea level rise is coming, it's baked in, it's happening no matter what we do. And that's clearly gonna affect our beaches, because as the ocean rises, there will be less beach there. And one of the most important ways that will impact us in California is the beaches are super fun places to go. And as the oceans rise and people don't take action to mitigate that appropriately, there will be less beaches for us to go play on. And as the days get hotter, there's no beaches to go to, that's going to be a bummer. In addition to all the terrible real physical risks there are for climate change, just having fewer beaches to go to, it's just kind of a bummer. So that's a bad thing. And things that don't get talked about enough that are, I try not to focus too much on the scary things, but as temperatures rise in the ocean, the oxygen content of the water goes down. It's called deoxygenation. That's bad for fish. They need oxygen to breathe. And as carbon gets absorbed by the ocean, something like 90% of the carbon that's been emitted has been absorbed by our oceans. As the carbon content of the water rises, the pH of the ocean is also increasing. It's called ocean acidification. And that makes it harder for animals to grow bones. So things like clams and oysters that have external skeletons become weaker, and it damages the food web, and everything's interconnected, and the consequences of these things are not worth playing around with. Sorry to be a bummer. You're on mute, Kayla.
I am so sorry. I thought I clicked the off mute button, but I also saw that Marie and Cherry mentioned that this has impacts to us as community members through threats in homes and businesses. And when there's less beach, there's less tourists. And that means like a lot of threat for our businesses, and as well less taxes, or they pay a lot of taxes. So it's a very cascading problem. And I think we can talk about what is the most pressing. I know that climate change is a big problem, but what do you think specifically is the most pressing problem facing our oceans and beaches? Is it plastic pollution? Is it ocean acidification? I guess you can talk more about that.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And when I thought about how to answer it, I decided that the most pressing problem facing our oceans and beaches is a lack of political will to take action on these issues, be it climate, be it plastics. I mean, plastics emit CO2. As they decompose, CO2 is released from plastic. So plastic is a climate problem also. And the lack of political will to take drastic action on these problems is by far the biggest problem faced by land-based issues and ocean-based issues. So again, vote, phone bank, get involved with people you like, make a change. That's the problem. That's what needs fixing.
Yeah, you're bringing it all together, because it's showing how interconnected all these issues are, and how the actions that we take now, they can impact so much. Green New Deal, they can impact all of our ocean conservation efforts. It's just such an amazing thing. And that's why we're urging everyone to get involved with climate change, because this helps so many different people in so many different ways. I guess, so Surfrider, the two committees that you're working with Surfrider, Surfrider has different committees, are beach preservation and climate change. Do you want to talk a little bit about each organization and kind of what is beach preservation and why does Surfrider believe that's important?
Yeah, thanks. So let me plug Surfrider real quick. I wholeheartedly feel that the best thing you can do is to find a group of people that you like and they're taking action and get with those people and take action, because you're not going to stick with it unless you enjoy what you're doing. So come test us out, see if you like Surfrider. This group, you all are amazing. You seem to be doing great. So maybe just stick where you are and keep doing what you're doing. But if you're interested, SurfriderSD.org is the San Diego chapter of Surfrider Foundation. Surfrider.org is the national chapter that'll link you to wherever you happen to live. And Surfrider does have different initiatives that they focus on. Climate change is one that I was personally involved in making. We kind of strong-armed Surfrider into taking a stance on climate. They were trying to say, yeah, it's not our wheelhouse. But we convinced them, yeah, it's affecting the ocean. You need to make a specific climate initiative. Beach preservation is actually where Surfrider got started. Development along the coastline, especially in California, where the group got started, has always been threatening public access to the beach. And there was no advocacy group out there trying to preserve access to the beach for people who didn't own property on the beach. And that is what the Beach Preservation Committee is about. That is now dovetailing into the climate crisis, because as the sea rises, as the beaches disappear, preserving those beaches that we have left becomes even more important. And our Beach Preservation Committee, by the way, is kicking ass right now. They're doing such a good job. They just won a major win. If you go to the beach, when they armor the bluff, when they armor the back of the beach there to preserve that private house that's on the top of the bluff, they do that at the expense of the public's use of the beach. When you put a seawall on a bluff, that beach can no longer move, it's fixed, and it will only get skinnier. It will never get bigger again for the rest of time or for the existence of that seawall. So those seawalls are bad, and Surfrider does not like those. And our Beach Preservation Committee just stopped a major one from getting put in Solana Beach, which is almost entirely seawall. If you like that kind of policy, really legal wonky work, the Beach Preservation Group is for you. And if you want to learn, you'll be drinking from the fire hose the minute you go meet with them. The climate group is mostly focused on advocating for climate action plans. They're very heavily involved with the San Diego Green New Deal folks. And things that they're really focusing on right now have to do with Blue New Deal, so advocating for kelp beds out in the ocean. Their carbon sequestration from marine life can be up to 20 times more efficient than land-based life, and that's not something that gets talked about enough. And something that's kind of fun is banning gas lines connecting to new houses. That's not very surfy, but it's connected to the climate crisis, and carbon's bad for the ocean. So preventing people from using fossil fuels to heat their home is another thing that we've really been pushing at Surfrider.
Ryan, you're just a wealth of information. Thank you so much. I guess we're going to go on the Q&A session, but I just wanted to impart my little piece of wisdom here. Well, first of all, blue carbon is amazing. It should be talked about more often. Yeah. Surfrider has a bunch of different communities ranging from plastic to water quality to climate change to beach preservation. So if you're interested in any of those, really recommend you check it out. And then at the beginning of this question, you said how it's really important to find a community that you genuinely enjoy within climate change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for all of them, because what at least I found is the people working with climate change, they're such genuinely kind people that want to change the world for good, and it motivates me even more. So every single time I get off one of our group's meeting calls, I have a huge smile on my face because all the people are so motivated and dedicated to work. So I hope you guys, if you're like interested in joining, I hope you guys find that same joy as well. I think, do we want to start with the question that you said you would answer originally?
Let me answer that one real quick, because the answer is easy. Plastic recycling is a lie. It's a myth. The answer is to use less plastic and to get legislation passed to ban single-use plastics. recycling is bad. The whole concept of recycling was pushed and funded by the oil industry. There's a ton of articles out there about that. Grist is my favorite place to get climate-related news, but with a minimal amount of Googling, you'll find multiple articles just recently from September about this. So I don't advocate for recycling. I advocate for less plastic. And that's my answer to that question.
And I think Surfrider has actually a whole committee on that. So yeah. For plastic reduction. So if you're interested in that, definitely join that. I think it's interesting how all these things can be very like interconnected, as you said, and some of the solutions that we think may be solutions aren't actually the best way to go. So does anyone have any more questions? Yes, there are only so many times plastics can be recycled. And I think if we start reducing our plastic use, even in our own way, that can have a big impact. Okay.
Books. So yes. You can just come out, you're ready for me to done, stop talking about that one. Because I love telling people what books to read. Let me just mention my two favorites right now. My absolute favorite book that I think everyone should read is called Eat Like a Fish. It's about blue carbon. And it's just such a fun read. The guy who wrote it led such an interesting life. And now he's a seaweed farmer off the coast of New England. It's a fantastic book. And you will be so inspired about this blue carbon solution to the climate crisis. So Eat Like a Fish. Read that book. The next book that you should read is called The Water Will Come. It's by Jeff Goodell. He's a Rolling Stone author. That book is amazing. It's terrifying, but fun to read. I don't think you should read the books. It'll just scare the pants off you because then you won't sleep. So those two, Eat Like a Fish and The Water Will Come. Excellent books.
I am definitely going to check that out. So thank you for telling me about this. And thank you, Natalia, for posting the Surfrider website in the chat. Does anyone else have any questions? I think we can take one more. I guess while we're waiting for questions, we can talk maybe a little bit about like blue carbon. So just to quickly define blue carbon means instead of trees being the carbon storage encouraged sink, it's actually sea grasses and mangroves, and as you said, kelp. So all of these have much more carbon storage and much more carbon sink, and they can take in a lot more. And I think that's really important that we push that because not a lot of people know about it. I guess Ryan can add anything else to he can add. That was just a very brief overview.
The more you learn about it, the more inspired you're going to be. Go read about it.
Yes, wetlands are a great source of blue carbon. Okay, so I think we'll transition on to the next speaker. Ryan, thank you so much for talking. Our next person will be Isabel with George.
Again, I just want to thank Ryan for teaching us so much about ocean preservation. I know personally I gained so much knowledge through what he had to say, and definitely will take some tips for my lifestyle. And so next we have a special guest talking about biodiversity. So hi, George, I'm so glad that you could join us today. And I know that you're—
Hello, everybody.
Yes, at the San Diego Zoo. So could you go more in depth about your experience and role as a zoo tour guide?
Well, hello, everybody. I'm very excited to be here. I'm actually very also happy to see that the youth is really thinking about climate change and conservation. All of those things are really going to make a huge difference. I want to thank each and every one of you, especially all of you that are attending right now. Yes, my name is Jorge Sanchez. I've been working at San Diego Zoo since 1987, so 36 years. Am I doing math right? And I've done a whole bunch of different things. I'm a trainer for the bus department, so I train people how to drive those big, huge buses and do tours. Also, I do VIP tours, so I've had an opportunity to take around celebrities, dignitaries, religious leaders. I've also did animal shows for about 12 years, had a wonderful experience with all that. And also I'm the Spanish media spokesperson for the zoo. So every once in a while you might see me on TV if you change the channel all of a sudden, you're on the Spanish channel.
That's amazing. And I know throughout the past decades, we've been seeing more and more animals becoming endangered and even extinct. So how do you think the climate crisis is affecting not only us, but animals as well?
You know, that's a really good one. You know, first of all, I also want to say Surfrider, I'm glad that they kick ass. I had to say that. So I'm glad that those guys are doing a great job there as well. Well, you know, warmer weather, that is one of the main things that we are seeing with climate change. We're seeing a lot of summer-like temperatures. I remember when I was a kid, I would be going to Thanksgiving and be, you know, with my coats and my jackets and, you know, be all nice and warm. Now I'm actually going in shorts. So we're seeing that the temperature seems to be longer with warmer weather. I'm sure you're all aware about the polar ice caps, where they are melting. In fact, I think just recently there was a huge chunk of one that was up in the northern, I think it was in the North Pole, that had just broke off. Wildfires, we're experiencing that pretty much all the time. We just had one recently here in San Diego, plus all the ones that are still continuing in California. Rising sea levels. So, you know, I heard a tiny bit of what the previous speaker had said. You talked about mangroves. So yes, rising sea levels are going to affect mangroves, and they're going to affect even just, you know, regular beaches and, you know, homes that are kind of next to the beach as well. We've also been seeing drought. So what can drought cause? Well, it can not only cause problems with animals and us, but food shortages. Could there be conflicts later on in the future between countries and regions? Who knows? That's always a possibility. It kind of sounds a little sad, but there's still a lot of hope. Hurricanes, the intensities that are happening, the frequencies that they're happening as well. For those of you that may or may not know, it looks like they named the hurricanes from A to Z, naming them with people names. And I think this is the first time they actually went into the alpha system, so the Greek alphabet. So that means what we've had, like 27 or so hurricanes at this point. Ocean temperatures, they're definitely rising as well. We've seen great white sharks sightings off the coast of California. We've seen whale sharks. Seaweed is also kind of, the seaweed beds are suffering as well. Seaweed just kind of detaches and deteriorates, and all the animals that live in the area are really having a challenge with all that as well. I'm sure that you might have heard also about coral bleaching that's happening throughout a lot of coasts all around the world. The Great Barrier Reef is having major problems with that. I think what it is with that is a small degree. I think it's either 1 to 3 degrees or so difference can actually kill coral. And coral is what's actually protecting a lot of our coasts as well. In Brazil, you might have heard recently also how they are doing a lot of clear cutting. Sometimes they are taking the lumber and grazing for cattle as well. Now, all countries do need to do what they can in order to feed their people and to have an economy as well. So there's got to be a little bit of a balance in there. So that's one of the challenges that we're having as well. By having less of a forest, that increases the carbon footprint in the atmosphere and causing those greenhouse effects. Again, warmer weather. But a couple of animals that I'll throw in there, I'll try to go briefly because there's just so much to talk about all this stuff. The polar bears. Everyone loves polar bears, especially when they're small. They're all cute and cuddly. And boy, when we've had baby polar bears at the zoo, they're adorable. But there was a keeper named Joanne Simerson. She had been working at the zoo for quite some many years, like a couple of decades at least. And she would go to Churchill, Canada to do a lot of studies on polar bears to see the behaviors from the climate change and you know how the ice is just not forming. Polar bears depend on ice. They will swim. Yeah, they are marine mammals. They will swim from ice to ice, kind of like icebergs or so, and get way far out into the ocean in order to catch their food. They can't just swim out there. They can't do that for extended periods of time. So what are some of the effects that she has seen? Well, first of all, they are skinny. They're not finding food. Some of the challenges or some of the behaviors that they've seen also is that polar bears are actually going into landfills, human landfills, to try to find food. That gets animals too close to people, and that's always never a good mix when you're having a huge predator like that close to humans. We've also seen the babies. Babies are kind of dying because mom cannot produce the milk. There's also males sharing food that you would never see in the past. You would also see moms getting babies very close to adult males. You don't want to do that either, because what happens is adult males will kill offspring that are not theirs. So there is quite a bit of a challenge going on with that. Lastly, I'll throw sea turtles. Well, how is that affecting it? Well, maybe warmer sand is causing the sex of the hatchlings to be offset. I don't know that much as far as what temperature does what, but they're going to end up with more females this year or in the future, or more males? Can they be breeding? So again, there's so much stuff that just kind of intermingles with climate change.
Of course. And I'm just so inspired seeing you being able to combine your love for animals with the importance of the climate crisis as well. And personally, I've been to the San Diego Zoo and I've been in love with it and love seeing your guys' wildlife conservation and rehabilitation methods and different projects you guys have been doing. And I just wanted to ask you if you have any advice for people and especially the youth for ways that they can be involved in saving biodiversity.
Yes, you know, there's so many things that you can do. One of the things that we talk about at the zoo is just things that people can do at home. You probably already know some of it as well. Water usage, try to reduce your water usage. You know, if you're brushing your teeth, you know, turn off the water faucet. Zero scaping, so try to keep a yard that has lower water requirements. Hang drying your laundry when possible, carpooling, fuel efficient vehicles. Solar system, we actually install a solar system at our place and it's doing great. Community service is another thing that everybody can do as well to help, you know, what you're doing right now. That actually is a community service as well. So teaching people, making people aware, that's always a really good step. Education for anybody that wants to get into all this. You guys are, I'm sure, very intelligent because you guys are doing this kind of a project, but continue with all of that as much as you can. Finally, there's also field work that you can do, volunteering, in fact. There is one called, the zoo doesn't do a whole lot of volunteering as far as like, you know, really hands-on, but you can always check sandiegozoo.org to see if there's anything that might pop up. But there's also one organization that's actually out here in close to where I live, out in IB. It's called Wild Coast International. Now, that is a team that helps conserve coast and marine ecosystems. They address climate change through natural solutions. They work with a network of about, what is it? I think it was like 100 and something, an outrageous amount of marine protected areas and 11 of them here in San Diego. So what you can do is there is something called the Blue Carbon Ecosystem. What you can do is you can contact my friend. She used to be a former tour guide. Her name is Angela Kemsley. And you can reach her on email at angela@wildcoast.org. And they really need some help up in the little bit northern part of San Diego. They do a lot of restoration stuff as well.
That's amazing. Okay, so now we're gonna go into the Q&A section. I think we can fit in one question. So one person asked, what is your favorite wildlife conservation program being administered at the zoo or wild animal park at this time? And another fun question, what is your favorite animal at the zoo?
Well, let me answer the favorite animals. It's really, really quick. I used to answer it in three ways: an animal that I work with, an animal that we have that I haven't worked with, and an animal that we don't have. Animal that I work with, a binturong, a really neat animal that's found in Malaysia in those regions. It's related to the mongoose. It's pretty big. It smells just like buttered popcorn. Check it out, binturong. An animal that I haven't done a whole lot of work with is an okapi. It looks like a cross between a giraffe and a zebra, but it is a relative of the giraffe. And something that we now just got, it's called an aye-aye. An aye-aye comes, it's a member of the lemur family, and that is found in Madagascar. Really, really neat animal. It is not pretty necessarily, but I think it's just really cool. And as far as, what was the other question? My apologies.
No worries. The other question was, what is your favorite wildlife conservation program being administered at the zoo or wild animal park at this time?
You know what? People have heard about pandas. People have heard about the northern white rhinos, which now there's two left, by the way. Check it out, sandiegozoo.org. There's also the California condors. But something that's a little bit on the interesting side, there's a pocket mouse here in California. A pocket mouse is a very small mouse, and the zoo has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on preserving this particular animal. Now, why in the world are you going to want to have to protect a mouse? Everybody's trying to get rid of them from your house, right? Well, first of all, they are natural to this one region, and fragmentation has been the big part. So like a freeway cutting right in the middle of their habitat, all these homes coming up in the middle of their habitat. Back in the 80s, it was considered to be extinct, but in 1993, there was a population that was found off of Dana or in Dana Point, and then three more populations were found in Camp Pendleton. And so what the zoo did is they had to find them, translocate them to an area where they would be safe. So again, but why do you want to protect an animal like that? Well, I'll tell you what. I know the previous guest talked a little bit about the those homes, those expensive homes out on the beach. Well, they really owe a lot to this particular mice. How do plants reproduce? One of the ways that they propagate is through seeds, right? What do mice eat? They eat the seeds. They go around scattering the seeds, and the seeds of those plants is what's really holding the beaches. So there could be a lot of beach erosion if this mouse wasn't around. So that's one of my favorite ones. This is the little tiny guy. Again, sandaguzu.org, you can find information on that as well. I wish I had more time to talk about it, but there's just way too much to talk about.
No worries. That was amazing. Thank you so much, George. And now I will pass it over to Jesslyn.
Hi, so thank you so much, George, for teaching us about your work at the San Diego Zoo. Like Isabel mentioned, I love our zoo, and it was amazing hearing you speak about climate change through that lens. So our next guest speaker is environmental educator and creator of Queer Brown Vegan, Isaias Hernandez. So hi, Isaias. I'm extremely excited to have you here with us today. I followed your account on Instagram for a while. I love it so much. You create such an inclusive community for environmentalists. So first question is, what led you to your role as an environmental educator, and could you tell us more about what you do?
Yeah, I think what really inspired me growing up is I grew up in Los Angeles, and I grew up low income, first generation. My parents had immigrated from Mexico to the United States, and I lived nearby six toxic facilities growing up. And I realized at a young age that the environment I was in was not designed or equitably made compared to other cities that were nearby my own area. And that really started raising questions of what really environmentalism was for me. It wasn't until I was exposed to conservation and garden education growing up that I felt that it was such important topics, but I never really knew how it really interconnected to my own identity, my own work, and what that really meant to my community. And as you know, I had this premonition of idea. Oh, sorry. I had this like idea of people assuming like I had to go to school to be an environmental scientist. And so I went to UC Berkeley to get my environmental science degree. And I realized how much academics perpetuated inaccessible information. And I realized that that this information shouldn't have been privatized. It should have always been available to students. And that I realized that environmental justice and environmental racism was never talked about in school, mainly because it was seen as controversial. And that really made me angry, because when I learned about these topics, I realized that all the low-income communities similar that had my identities weren't exposed to this. And we realized that the terminology that was associated to our pain and our experiences was finally revealed. And I think that it shouldn't have taken me 19 years in my whole life to really learn what it really meant. And that's when I realized that I wanted to be an educator after I graduated with a science degree, because I realized that not everyone has access to this information, and not everyone really has the opportunities to have access and to talk about these conversations. So Queer Bound Vegan for me was a form of retaliation to really provide this accessible information to any type of individual wanting to learn about environmentalism, whether it be environmental justice, veganism, zero waste, any type of topic. I think that environmentalism can be engaging as long as it's presented in visual imagery.
Yeah, educating is bringing awareness and empowering people with solutions. And, you know, like you said, your platform makes this information so digestible to everyone. And I think that's something I'm really passionate about too, like bringing education in a way that all audiences can, you know, relate to. So as you mentioned, can you define environmental justice or elaborate on the disproportionate impacts of climate change on BIPOC communities?
Yeah, so environmental justice basically looks into the treatment of communities and where they're designed based off environmental location. And that basically means that the community you live in can determine your own health quality in the future. So it looks into race, your own identity, and economic status. And it's most predominantly known that environmental justice seeks for equal access for all cities and all areas to have access to clean water, clean air, and clean soil. Most often not due to policies in history that have prevented predominantly Black, Indigenous people of color. They haven't really allowed them to advocate for these types of justices. And with environmental justice, it kind of challenges the conservation movements that have happened in the 1960s, because most often not, Black and brown people were dying at the highest rates in the United States due to all of these environmental inequities. And the government really failed to provide any types of resources or failed to really acknowledge that these types of industries were poisoning communities, and decided to really regulate more on reform for conservation practices instead of communities' health.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think environmental justice sometimes is seen as a small sector within climate change, but you know, people need to understand that it's not an individual issue. It's so intersectional, and it's everything affects another. So, and as Connor and Ryan discussed, and you began to touch on, there's a leadership crisis within the climate crisis, and we've seen how climate change has played a large role in this 2020 presidential election. So, how have you been taking action in the election?
Yeah, I think I've been very vocal in the way that I'm talking about the issues. I'm involved with Climate Power 2020 and Earth Day Network's Earth Ambassador programs. And so the point of this is to really educate people of voting and the way that you're able to exercise your right to vote, and looking into what types of policies and practices are going to be in play. And just realizing that in this election, as many people have noted, just looking into how each of these things impacts communities of color, especially those who are queer and trans, is really my focus of how that's going to affect our communities. I think too, like displaying visual imagery and creating video graphics is so important, because most of the time the youth, millennials and Gen Zers are heavily on social media, and especially right now due to coronavirus. And it's important to really provide that type of accessible information, because right now we're physically not able to see each other. And I think that there's a huge, there's a lot of huge lives at stake during this election. So I think that's really the main purpose, is to educate people, and they're able to really make those decisions of what they want to do and for their vote. I think that everyone, it's a human right to have education incorporated, most especially environmental education.
Yes, for sure. So, you know, talking about how your platform is designed so youth can easily access this information. I mean, I know personally I can get lost for hours looking at all your amazing infographics, but how can youth get involved to continue educating themselves and the incredible work that you do?
Yeah, I think with the youth, it's just really finding your own niche. I think most often not, when I was younger, I was influenced by so many varieties of like climate advocates, activists, scientists, and I felt like, oh, I need to do this because they're doing this, or oh, my friend's doing this, so I have to do this. And I think I challenge the youth, most especially because I think that I'm 24 now. At age 18, I wasn't really doing as much, or age 19. I realized that I could have done more. But I think that we instill so much guilt in ourselves in trying to find out what we're really passionate about. And so I tell the youth to really write down things that they're very heavily interested in. It doesn't necessarily have to be directly correlated to environmental justice. It can be like looking at zero waste, veganism. It can be looking at makeup industry and how that's really incorporated with environmentalism, because most often not, any product that we use or any type of lifestyle we live contributes and has an environmental impact. And so the most important thing to realize for any youth out there trying to develop their work is that you all have your own unique journey to really express yourself and evolve around that, because not everyone's going to be an activist, not everyone's going to be an educator, and that's okay. I think that what's most important to empower yourself through is that only you know what you really want to do, and you shouldn't really feel ashamed if you're doing something different than others. And I think growing up myself, I felt that, oh my God, I'm not an activist, or I'm not doing too much. And I realized doing this form of environmental education was really my niche, because I felt that a lot of people didn't really have a community or have a person to really ask, to be like, what does this mean? Or freely ask this without an academic setting and being in the classroom and feeling kind of awkward or nervous to ask this type of question.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think that's such like an incredible thing about climate change, that there's so many ways you can be involved in this fight, you know? And just as youth, it's just amazing to know that we have people like you guys helping support us, and that we can tackle these issues in ways that you were talking, that we're personally passionate about. So we have time for a Q&A. So does anyone have any questions that they would like to ask? Okay, let's see. So where do you see environmental activism going?
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about environmental activism because I think most often not, I've seen even my generation always saying like, oh, I see hope in our younger generation, but it often portrays much more guiltiness, much more fear, much more responsibility on the youth. And I think with environmental activism, it's important to recognize that community has always been the one to create change. And that's what environmental justice was from. And I think that many people are often thinking like, I'm too old to join the movement, or I'm too young, or I don't know what to do. And I think that it's an intergenerational movement that builds upon even the people who are older than me. And I think also recognizing Indigenous voices and those who have done the groundwork to establish environmental activism, because I can't say like I was the first one to do environmental education, because I really wasn't, but I think it's important that we incorporate this type of ancestral and cultural knowledge in our activism work to continue pursuing a just future for everyone. And I think that it's about creating change with our community.
Okay, and we have one question from Kate. So what movies, podcasts, books about climate justice or environmentalism do you recommend?
Yeah, there's so much. I think that with movies, there's a really great series on Netflix. It's actually a movie. It was directed by Ellen Page. It's called There's Something Under the Water. It talks about environmental justice and environmental racism in Canada and what happened to an Indigenous community, of how they were lied to by this corporation saying that they were just going to build upon the river. And it happens that they polluted the rivers and all the community has some form types of cancers and health issues. And it's so, you know, so disappointing to see that. And I think there's another one, I forgot the name of it, but it's called Kiss the Ground. It recently came out this week actually, and it's about regenerative agriculture. And it looks into how our soil health has degraded. And so with environmental justice and climate justice, we're able to incorporate really healthy practices to regenerate the soil, because I think most often not we think about carbon emissions and how to control them, but it really starts from the soil. And there's this really great quote that I remember is that the food we eat either comes out as food or poison, because soil is the nature, the root of life. And so if we're not really taking care of our soil, what does that mean for our bodies? What does that mean for the food that we eat? So I think that it's really important to ask these types of questions and just really learn. And I think there's a really great podcast called Eco Chick and the Yikes podcast that talks about all of these environmental activism movements. And these two amazing women, climate justice leaders, they talk about the climate movement and their own experiences in the climate movement in the UK. So really recommend just listening to them. And they're younger than me, so I think a lot of people would more relate to their activism work.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching the movie. I'm planning to watch that this Sunday, so you just made me so much more excited. And podcasts, I personally get lost in podcasts, and I know everyone, like that platform is just a great way that people can do like everyday things, but also educate themselves on such important topics like this. So we have a really big request. If you could elaborate on BIPOC, I guess just the definition of that and how, yeah.
Yeah, so BIPOC is usually, its name is Black Indigenous People of Color. So for POC, a lot of the times meant people of color. And so a lot of activists, especially Black community, often felt that when we use POC, it often diluted or kind of separated or clumped in together of the issues. And I think with using Black Indigenous People of Color, it really emphasizes the differences that the Black community faces, most especially because the experiences I face is so much different than someone who may be Black or Indigenous. And so I really advocate in the climate movement that we use inclusive language to really not group everyone together, but also acknowledge their own experiences and history.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. I hope if anyone else has any more questions, I think we have time for one more. But if not, the podcast. Oh, yeah. So do you think you could provide a little quick list of the podcasts you recommended? I know I'd love to go through those. Yes. And Kiss the Ground is a movie that Isaias mentioned. And they're the amazing podcast.
Yeah. And then there's Something Under the Water. It's in, by Ellen Page. It's a really great documentary. I think it's really interesting to learn about. Okay, I'm just linking the Wikipedia, but I think that's pretty much it on that end. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, thank you so much, Isaiah. I'm so happy we were able to have you here today. It was an honor speaking to you. And those were all our guest speakers. I really hope you guys enjoyed. I think Kiala has some closing messages for you guys.
Oh my gosh. I just want to say, like, thank you to all of our amazing speakers and thank you to you guys for coming. I hope this really inspired you to take action on the climate movement or even just to get started with checking out some of these great environmental organizations that people were talking about. I just especially love that all of our different speakers had such different backgrounds and such different approaches to the problems that they were passionate about. And that's really inspiring to me. If I'm sure that like a lot of you guys would want to like get in touch with the speakers, if you want to, I'll put our contact information and we can connect you with all of them. That way you can continue learning more. I think that we learned today so much. We learned about like environmental justice, ocean conservation. We learned a little bit about wildfires and natural disasters. We learned about renewable energy, biodiversity, San Diego Green New Deal. We learned a little bit about plastics and recycling, what that role has on us. But there's so much more that we could cover. We just unfortunately don't have enough time. And we urge you guys to kind of research climate change and figure out a topic that you are really passionate about. And thank you so much. And so now Jesslyn's going to talk a little bit more.
Yeah, hi guys. So I'd also like to spread awareness about these two California Assembly bills that were introduced last session. So there's one bill called California Assembly Bill 1922 that would introduce climate curriculum in grades K through 12. And you know, like Isaiah's mentioned, education is so important in our society. It's so important that everyone just knows the basic issue of the climate crisis that's affecting everyone and all future generations. There's also another bill called the Youth Empowerment Act, titled AB 1858. This one would create a youth voting commission of youth ages 14 to 25. And although this isn't directly climate change related, this is super important because, you know, inspiring the youth who are on that commission to advocate for climate change will help in all our agendas and, you know, keep this youth movement pushing forward. So thank you guys so much. And like Kiala mentioned, if you guys want to join our pod, we will be sending the links in the chat. And Colin has some really fun and exciting news that he'd like to share.
Hello, just one more thing to tell you guys before you get sent off. Keep an eye out because we're going to be launching a new podcast in the near future. We don't have a set date, but it's coming out soon and it's going to be called Yeah, Let's Go. So it's going to be basically we're going to have a climate related professional sit down with one of our members and we're going to interview them and try to break down like the complex concepts that they have to talk about into a more easily digestible manner for the youth to understand. So we just think that this is another way for the youth to get educated, and we could just listen to it on the way to school, on the way to the park, anything. So I just think it's a very accessible way for people to listen, so just keep your eye out on that. And that's pretty much it. So thank you guys for joining.